Hey everybody, I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And it's Del Toro time. It's Del Toro time! We're back! It's 2001's what?
AI.
By? It's 2001's AI Artificial Intelligence, a movie called AI Artificial Intelligence because...
Nobody knew what AI was.
Nobody knew what AI meant. So like E.T., the extraterrestrial, they had to call it AI Artificial Intelligence, which is funny because everybody knows what AI does now.
Unfortunately.
It does our homework for us. It writes student papers for us. It makes it so that when kids do write papers that they don't use AI for, everyone thinks they used AI for it if it comes off semi-competently.
I'm so glad that AI wasn't around when I was in school because I would not have passed any of my
You
classes.
Wouldn't have passed any of your classes.
Because they would have thought I was using AI.
They would have thought, because you write like a robot.
Yep.
You write like a soulless robot,
yep.
Which is why you do so well at technical writing.
Exactly.
Which is why people love to hire you to write instruction manuals. I don't know what I'm getting at here. So this movie, based on Brian Aldiss, science fiction writer, based on Brian Aldiss's Super Toys Last All Summer Long, 1969, Kubrick options this movie in the 70s because he really wants to make another sci-fi film. He loves the concepts behind it, but he can never quite get it off the ground. He works with Aldiss for a while on the screenplay and fires him. Aldiss never forgave Kubrick for that. And not only does he fire Brian Aldiss, he hires Brian Aldiss's enemy, Ian Watson, who I did not realize was Brian Aldiss's enemy. Ian Watson, another science fiction writer, but Brian Aldiss said, like, I think his quote was like, the bastard not only fired me, he then hired my arch enemy. I did not know science fiction writers actually had arch enemies.
It's pretty sick.
But it's true. And Ian Watson was just like, yeah, we hate each other. don't know why. Ian Watson worked on this thing for decades with Kubrick. In fact, there's a wonderful, what is it called? A wonderful article called Plumbing Stanley Kubrick, written by Ian Watson about writing the screenplay to this. And if you ever want to know, it's long. And if you ever want to know what it was like to work with Stanley Kubrick, to be basically his writing robot for 2 decades, but still you're getting $6,000 a week to do it, plus a $100,000 bonus when the movie comes out. And so you're just like, I just gotta, even though Watson didn't really care about the money because he was socialist. And so he didn't think that, but Kubrick, not a socialist. Kubrick was like, I hope the socialists don't take over because I'll lose all my money. Even though he lived in Europe, he lived in England for 20 years. I just learned from this article, he lived in England for 20 years, still went off American time, though. So Kubrick would, like, wake up, like, in the afternoon.
Why?
Because he worked so closely with Hollywood.
Okay, that's fair.
So he works on this for a long time. He tries to get Spielberg on board for a long time. Finally, near the end of his life, he basically said, like, this is something that Spielberg should direct. When this movie came out, a lot of people thought Spielberg sort of took it from Kubrick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, Kubrick died. Spielberg's going to take over. And they were like, argh. But Kubrick was actually like, no, I think this is a Spielberg project. I think this is closer. This aligns.
Spielberg was like that? Or Kubrick?
Kubrick was like that. Kubrick was like, I think this aligns closer with Spielberg's, like, style than it does with mine.
I'm falling off the chair.
Don't fall off the chair. We're almost done. We're almost done. Sit up straight. Spielberg, ladies and gentlemen, Willow is very small, so she's sitting on like 3 pillows in order, we tried to put her on a stool, it didn't work, she was about right here, it didn't work. Spielberg comes on, he spends like a year working on this, and then he's done. To give you an idea of what their working habits were like, between 1980, when Kubrick made The Shining, which was our last Kubrick film, was that our last Kubrick film we watched?
Did he do another film after that?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yes. So in between The Shining and this, Kubrick makes Full Metal Jacket.
Didn't watch that.
In 1987. And then he makes Eyes Wide Shut in 1989. That's it. Makes 2 movies in between 1980 and 2001 and his death. In between, I think, Raiders of the Lost Ark, which was 81, and this, Spielberg made, I believe, 13 films.
Yep.
So this goes to show, Spielberg, also a perfectionist, but in a different way than Kubrick. Kubrick also had, like, stuff that he sort of, like, flitted in and out of, and then he ended up working on. He did Eyes Wide Shut because he thought, like, basically he was allowed to do Eyes Wide Shut, I think, with the promise that this movie was going to be a huge science fiction hit.
And then he died.
And then he died. Unexpectedly. I think it was pretty shocking when he died. No, so that happens. This movie comes out. And it's super controversial.
Why?
You'll find out.
Cool.
You'll find out why it's controversial. It's
2.5 hours long.
It's 2.5 hours long, so we should get started.
Yeah. Looking forward to this 2.5 hour long movie.
It's a long movie. I haven't seen it since I think it first came out, so this is going to be a big rewatch for me. I'm pretty excited. Because I remember liking it. Okay. So,
did it feel like 2.5 hours long when you watched it the last time?
I don't remember, but I do not think it did. Okay. I think I remember just being like, most of the time. So, are you ready to go into the theater and watch Eyes Wide? No.
Nope.
AI, artificial. Steven Spielberg, we watched, only to watch two of his movies, mm-hmm. and he's made like a billion. We watched Duel.
Yep.
And we watched the one about the shark with the Jaws.
Jaws.
No. Last Emperor. No. Always. No. We only watched two Spielberg. We watched Jaws and we watched Duel. Like, it's just so wild that... Also, you are going to completely understand why Guillermo del Toro is into this movie.
I figured.
You are going to watch it and go, oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay. The whole time, you're not going to be shocked, okay? Perfect. Are you ready to go into the theater? You got your popcorn?
No.
You got your ticket stub? You got your... Milk Duds and Juju Bees.
Now you're making me sad that we have popcorn.
Here we go.
Woo!
I hated that. Whoa! Oh!
Wow, what a film. We just got back
boy.
From the theater.
It was such an exciting film, it blew my beard off. Just wiped it off my face. I can't believe it. It was so exciting.
So exciting. I actually changed locations.
You changed locations. We're not even in the same room anymore.
Nope.
We're so into the movie that we had to split apart.
Yep.
Wow. Wowzies. Wow. Wowzer wows. AI, artificial intelligence.
What a movie.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Do you know how hard it is to look up anything about this movie because it's called AI, artificial intelligence?
I imagine fairly difficult at this point. There's got to be millions of research papers being done on just AI in general, and that's what's going to get pinged first.
Considering that Guillermo del Toro himself has written extensively about mm-hmm. the subject of AI, just trying to find his thoughts on this movie, it's a shot in the dark at this point. What a stupid name for a movie.
What a dumb name for a movie in modern times.
In
Unfortunately,
modern times.
This was in 2001 when this movie came out. So
So a lot of the articles I keep seeing about this movie are like, it's more relevant than ever. And I'm like, kind of. It's not really.
It's not really not about really, AI.
It's not really about. I mean, in a like classic science fiction sense of the term, like, what if AI became like emotional? But that's not what we're dealing with.
Funny enough, one of my friends is taking a science fiction, like a science fiction lit class.
Yeah.
And just wrote a paper on... the automaton ear, and I can't remember what the other short story was called, but it was the subject of the paper was just basically about in sci-fi when humans source out human connection or human senses to AI, like, or to robots and machines, like what that means.
Yeah.
So it ties into that, I think, but also it's just a Pinocchio story, so
It's interesting, and one of the articles I read about this movie, it wasn't really about this movie, it was about Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, this is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio before Guillermo del Toro made Pinocchio, because it has the same plot in that it's not about, this movie is more about him wanting, well, I guess they're both about it. They're both about Pinocchio wanting to become a real little boy, and in the end, finding out that that's not necessary. That's unnecessary.
And also, both Pinocchios are based off of dead children.
They're both based on dead children. Okay, let's go back to the beginning. So, based on Super Toys Last All Summer Long, which is essentially the first 15 minutes of this movie, mm-hmm. more or less. In Super Toys Last All Summer Long, it's about a family who can't have a kid who then adopts a robo boy, a super toy boy, who has a stuffed bear named Teddy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but you don't know that he's a robot boy in the short story until the end. And then they find out that they can finally have a kid,
mm-hmm.
and they have to break it to the robot boy. We're going to have to get rid of you. That's basically the story. And at the end, you're supposed to be like, oh my God, he was a robot boy the whole time. He wasn't just some sort of, there was nothing wrong with him. Like the story like sort of leads you to believe there's something going on psychologically with the kid. But in the end, you're like, he was the robot all along. He's the super toy.
They use the word super toy in the movie.
They sure do. They sure do. Without explaining it, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory. It's an advanced robotic toy that kids can like hang out with. The intro to this movie has nothing to do with the rest of this movie.
Yeah, what is the intro to this movie?
It starts off with this like not drone shot, because I don't think they used drones back in 2001. Maybe they did. I don't know.
A crane shot.
Yeah, a crane shot of the like ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, in the distant future, when humans have pretty much destroyed the planet and all major cities have pretty much fallen, people can't have kids anymore. And also robots are around, because robots don't require resources, actually. Once they've been built, don't need anything.
Yeah, it's interesting, because that is the crux of the short story. And it's also that thing where you can tell this movie was in production for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a cobbled together quality to the screenplay. It does seem at times like there's sort of a lot of dangling threads, stuff that is given a lot of weight that then kind of falls away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because until the very end of this movie, you don't really need to know that the world's fallen apart. Like, there's roving bands of like anti-android people, but.
And that's just true in modern day. Right?
But it's not like, you don't really see, it's not this Mad Max existence that we see.
No.
Because we're just sort of confined to this sort of upper middle class suburb.
Yeah, the intro goes to explain like, oh, more and more robots are being built because there's less people and yada yada yada. Then it goes to a like conference. It's a really weird place to have a conference.
Yeah.
It's like in some guy's office and there's like 30 people there.
Right. 20. It's in the office of William Hurt? Who is it?
Oh, the actor's name. I thought you meant the character. Right. And I was like, I'm fairly sure it's not William Hurt.
I don't know why I don't have this just pulled up. I should have the cat. There we go.
Meryl Streep is in this movie. You didn't believe me when I said that the first time.
I mean, it's William Hurt. William Hurt is kind of the creator of these robots.
He's like a tech CEO.
Right. And
but
he's
not an Elon Musk. He actually does the like developing of like his tech.
Right. He's what everyone thought Elon Musk was.
Yeah.
He builds these. His company creates these humanoid androids.
Mm-hmm.
From his office in the fallen New York City. That's why they're showing you like New York is mostly underwater and his mm-hmm. office for some reason is still in.
Which I didn't realize at the beginning of this movie that they were in New York City. Is that something that we were shown?
Well, I think you're supposed to know that from the opening shots of the water.
Okay,
but, like,
I didn't connect those dots.
But it's very weird because it doesn't really connect that much. He proposes the idea of what if we made robot children.
Yeah, and he makes the robots, like his company makes the robots, and then they send them out to other companies that specialize in specific types of robots.
Right.
And there's one woman in the who's in the like meeting who's like, hey, what if that was a terrible idea though? Like if you make these robot kids, because his whole idea is we build this robot child who's capable of love. Like we've made all of these robots who are not like self-motivated. They just kind of do what they're supposed to do. What if we made a robot capable of actually feeling love? And we had them imprint on a family and then they would love that family forever. And this one woman is like, hey, so if you make a robot who is able to love and you've like make them love these people, what responsibility then do you have to this robot?
Right.
And he's like, we'll worry about that when we get to it.
And of course, they never really, I mean, I guess that's kind of that's why I say that this movie's approach to AI is mm-hmm. backwards from what we're discussing these days, because I think it's become more and more apparent as mm-hmm. artificial intelligence is developed that we don't have any responsibility to artificial intelligence except to keep it out of our darn lives.
Yeah. I mean, we don't really even have actual artificial intelligence. We just have
algorithms. Yeah.
Like if we were able to create a fully sentient computer program, that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
We're not able to do that. We're just calling things AI because it sounds cool.
Yes. So I saw this movie when it first came out. I saw it on video. I didn't see it in the theater. And then I saw it for the second time when we watched it. And when I first saw it, I remember Roger Ebert wrote a review that I was actually kind of upset at because he accused the movie of, I was upset at it when I first read it in 2001. He accused the movie of, let me see, I have it right here, of raising questions that it never bothers to try to find the answers to. And that he says the movie is enormously provocative, but the story seems to skew against its natural grain. It bets its emotional capital on David and his desire to be a real boy. But it's the old woodcarver, Geppetto, not the puppet who is the poignant figure in Pinocchio. The movie toys with David's nature in the edgy party scenes and then buys into his lovability instead of balancing on the divide between man and machine. Both of the closing sequences, the long wait and an investigation, are unsuccessful. The first goes over the top. The second raises questions that it isn't prepared to answer. And his whole thing, and he brought this up in the first Transformers movie as well, is for Roger Ebert, for Roger Ebert, he's like, I don't care about these robots. They're just robots. They're just programmed to think a certain way. I care about the people, like the actual souls. And this
I thought.
movie, he says that for him, this movie was like, we're supposed to care about this little boy robot, but in the very beginning, they tell us we've just programmed this robot to think it has an attachment to a mother, but it's still just a robot. And
I
then in,
don't agree with him.
well, that was where I was originally. I was like, but that's the nature of fiction. Like, they're none of these are real people. Like, we're none of these are real characters. Like, they're not human. Nobody's human in a movie. They're all just made up characters. It's you bring your own emotional investment to it. However, this time watching it, I was a little affected by that. There was a part of me in the back of my head going, you're wrong, David. You're just a machine. You're just crunching numbers. You're not
I
really
think,
in love with this mother.
but I think that that's the point. I feel like they created this machine that thinks that it loves somebody and has a fundamentally flawed understanding of what love is because they've pushed this feeling into it. And that doesn't make the programming for the robot less real. Like I feel like it goes with that question of what responsibility do we have to something that we make that thinks it knows what love is and doesn't.
I guess that's where I'm coming from is the movie raises that question in the very beginning, and then it doesn't pursue it because the humans get left behind after the first third, and we never get asked, like, why would this, what happens to a robot that loves? Because the robot's then kind of isolated the rest of the time, and then we jump ahead 2,000 years.
I feel like that's a
Spoilers, everybody.
very, I don't know. I feel like that's a very human thing to do. I think that is the answer to the question. What do we do with something that we've made to love us? We realize we've made a mistake and then abandon it. Oh my gosh, it's a Frankenstein
Oh
story.
my gosh, it's a
Whoa.
Frankenstein story. So yes, so AI artificial intelligence takes the basis of the Brian Aldiss story and creates Pinocchio by way of Frankenstein, but not Pinocchio by way of Frankenstein the way Guillermo del Toro clearly saw this movie and was like, oh, I can make a Pinocchio by way of Frankenstein. This is like,
Pinocchio.
we've made Pinocchio. We've made an intelligent puppet that thinks it's alive, but then finds out it's not, and then so wants to be alive by finding the blue. I mean, it's explicit, obviously. It's he
It's
reads
well, he
Pinocchio,
reads Pinocchio and then he's like, Pinocchio is real. Like
and
it's
then he sets off. He has a Jiminy Cricket with him. He goes off to like the fun fair. It's all there, but then it also throws in the Frankenstein by having all humans kind of terrified of these creations and wanting to destroy all these creations
Many
it can't understand.
humans. We
Yes,
see
there.
there's quite a few humans. This movie, I am biased, has my favorite character in all of fiction in it. So favorite character in all of fiction is in this movie. His name is Teddy. He's perfect.
So we start watching this movie, and you're immediately like, I love this bear, and I cannot imagine. I will not let anything happen to this bear. You approach the appearance of this bear with the fervor and indignity of someone who is introduced to a dog in a horror movie. It was like watching a YouTuber see a dog and be like, nothing better happened to that dog. And I'm like, you were just like, nothing better happened to this lovable teddy bear.
He's the best character.
And nothing does happen to the lovable teddy
No,
bear.
he survives.
Yeah, he totally. Yep.
Forever.
He is played by Jack Angel, who was a voice and radio personality, a voice actor, radio personality, who's done, like, if you look at his filmography, it's like Ramjet and Astro Train in the Transformers, a sailor in The Little Mermaid. He made the Toon Shoes noises in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Incredible.
Like, he plays Rocky Gibraltar in every Toy Story movie. Mm-hmm. He plays Mr. Shark, who goes, look at me, I'm Woody. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Like, that's it. He's a guard in Lilo and Stitch. He's a guard in The Incredibles. Like, he has so many credits, and they're all just kind of just random characters.
Mm-hmm.
But he also is in a lot of, like, Saturday morning TV shows. He plays The Flash and all the Super Friends shows.
Okay.
Multiple voices in, like, Scooby-Doo, DuckTales, mm-hmm. Real Ghostbusters, just various voices. So just this ubiquitous man.
Yeah.
And he also, I think he was like he did like voice casting and stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of video games.
Okay.
A lot of video games. Papa Smurf in the Smurfs 2 video game.
Fair enough.
Lash in World of Warcraft, Battle for Azeroth, and then a lot of voiceovers in live action films. So just this guy, and from what I remember, he comes in to do this voice, and Spielberg, this is to me the most telling thing, the difference between Spielberg and Kubrick is Spielberg's like, okay, in order to keep this genuinely authentic, we're gonna have you, Jack, never read the script, never interact with anyone. We're just gonna have you isolated. So it sounds like a doll that's pre-recorded to do these lines. And then he's like, but could you come on set a few times? We kind of need you on set a few times. Could you come on set? Until eventually he was acting the role. Like,
yeah.
Spielberg not being able to stand the sort of Kubrickian, like, ultra realism of the character. It's like, it'll sound better if he's a lovable bear.
And so, it does.
So it does. Yes.
He's still the best.
He's still a little unreal, though.
Yes, which I think is perfect. Like, there are moments where he sounds like a doll.
Yeah.
Like, when he's saying David's name at the what is it called? Why do I want to say Flesh Fest? That doesn't sound right.
I think it's Flesh Fair.
Flesh Fair, okay, yeah. Which is a weird thing to call that, because they're just bits of machine. When he's talking to the girl, he's like, I'm looking for David. He sounds like a doll.
Yes.
But he also is just a lovable little guy who is the only sensible person in the entire movie.
Yes. So there are 6 different versions of Teddy, including the biggest one had 50 servos in it so that it could move, like, as realistically as you see it. And then Industrial Light and Magic, who did the special effects, of course, had to figure out how to CGI over this thing because they'd never done anything with that much hair before.
Okay.
So the hair, there were 1.5 million hairs on Teddy, and each one had 8 curve segments. So, like, 10 million segments of hair just for this one character every time animated it. This movie has a lot of special effects in it that were amazing at the time
and, like, look pretty good still
and still hold up. There's that shot of the woman who's a robot, and she turns to the right at one point, and you see that, like, she's just a face with like being held together. That was like the money shot for the ads. They're like, look at what we're doing. And what's hilarious is then like a few years later, the indie film, what's it called about the robot, the indie movie, she's an AI robot, and it's got sexy guy in it and the other guy in it, and they do the dance. What's it called?
I have no idea.
Hold on, what is it called? Who's the guy? What's the guy's name? What's the guy? Who's
when
the
did
guy?
It come out?
He's the guy. He's in that one Coen Brothers movie, and he's in the Star Wars. And, oh my God, what is it called? This is what happens when you get old. You're like, who's the Coen Brothers? Coen.
When did the movie come out?
A while ago. Oh, he's inside Llewyn Davis. Oscar Isaac. Starring Oscar.
I have no idea who that is.
Starring Oscar Isaac. Oscar Isaac played
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. Oh my God. Boy, oh my.
That didn't come out a few years later. That came out 14 years later.
Okay, well, 14 years later, Ex Machina has an entire character who is an AI robot who is see-through and only has part of her body. And it's an indie film. Like, yeah. Just to know that, like, the technology...
They had that technology, which is great, but they also had the two other robots that were at the Flesh Fair as well.
Yes.
That looked like nightmare monsters.
Right, so we get to see various stages of development of these different AI creations who are all built and designed to do different things. So your basic plot, I'm just going to give a basic rundown for anyone who for some reason didn't watch this movie but decided they wanted to listen to us talk about it.
Yeah.
Basic rundown. David is an AI robot who is given to this family whose son is in like suspend cryo sleep because he has an untreatable medical condition. The father works for the company, and so they give it to him as kind of like a test robot. The mother is in like dire straits emotionally.
Yep.
The robot is created with, if you say a certain set of words in order, the robot will imprint on you and think it you are its mother and will fall in love with you. Mm-hmm. Not its father for some reason. The mother ends up being freaked out by this robot, hating her husband for bringing at home, eventually bonding with it, doing the sequence of words, and David falls in love with her. How, unfortunately, her son, there's a cure or something, he gets out of cryo sleep and comes home, has a weird relationship with David.
I think the child does not know how to react to David.
Yeah, you come home and your parents have got another boy.
Yeah, and he's just like, I don't know what this is or why this is. I feel like my place as their child has been taken over by a robot.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to attempt to assert dominance over you because you're just a robot. So doesn't really matter.
He played by the little, so David, the robot, is played by Haley Joel Osment, fresh off his Oscar nomination for The Sixth Sense. Mm-hmm. The son, Martin, is played by Jake Thomas, who you all know as Matt McGuire, the younger brother of Lizzie McGuire, from the TV series Lizzie McGuire. He was originally cast, I think, as Mowgli in The Jungle Book 2 before being replaced by Haley Joel Osment, which he also played a young Hugh Hefner in a Hugh Hefner biopic. So he comes in, he's good. He's really good in this because, as you said, while we were watching it, he's not just a jerk.
No,
he's understandably confused and hurt by this robot boy who he makes eat spinach.
He doesn't make him, the thing is, he doesn't make the robot do anything.
Yeah, it's
he messes with the programming a bit, but it's more like by the time the spinach thing happens, he's just treating him like a younger brother.
They have a birthday party for the young for the boy.
Okay,
who they only invite bullies to.
Okay, here's the thing, their boy is like still disabled. I think he has like measles. I think that's the sort of like
no relevance to today.
I think that's the sort of vibe they're going for, though, because when he gets out, he has like leg braces and all of that stuff.
Polio. It's more like polio.
Yeah, he has, more like polio. And they decide to host a pool party.
It doesn't make any sense.
They're just like, yeah, we'll host a pool party for our disabled son and also our robot child who cannot go in the water.
The robot is not supposed to go in water, even though I don't think it hurts him. He's not like a Cybertruck. He can actually get wet, but
yeah,
he's heavy and he falls to the bottom. But also, yeah, the boy has robot legs now, can't swim. And they're like, big pool party. We're only inviting the meanest children.
Yeah. Bound to happen. The brother's friends are like, wow, this is your new robot brother, cool, let's test it out, and try and see if he has like the sense, because robots are programmed with the ability to avoid pain, like things that would cause pain to humans, just so they don't get damaged. And for some reason, they didn't just program that into the boy. They programmed the, if I am going to be hurt, I need to get behind the nearest human being and beg them to help me or I'm going to die.
Yes, it's strange programming.
And so that happens, and he's grabbed onto his brother and is walking backwards trying to avoid getting hurt and falls into the lake. Not the lake.
Yeah.
The pool.
These aren't Asimov's laws of robotics.
No.
These aren't, I cannot harm another human or by inaction cause another human to come to harm. This is, if somebody tries to hurt me, I'm grabbing the nearest child in leg braces and dragging him into the yeah. pool with me. And then I'm not letting go.
No. And so parents dive into the water to save the brother and leave him at the bottom of the lake, of the pool. I keep wanting to say the lake for some reason.
It may as well be a lake, as useful as a pool as it is.
Yeah. And so, and before this, he had gone into his mother's room to cut off a lock of her hair after her brother said that he should do that. And the father, for some reason, right. thought that he was going to stab her in the eye.
And then he almost did stab her in the eye.
Because they all freaked out. Yeah.
And he's holding like sharp scissors at her face. Yep. Yeah. David walks in, is trying to cut off a piece of her hair. The father sort of comes to and sees him. He's like, David, what are you doing? Yeah. And the mom like jumps up while there's scissors in her face. The father brings home this robot boy mm-hmm. per his office. Is like, do you want a robot boy? Your other kid may not come out of this. The father brings home the robot boy and then immediately seems to resent him. The father doesn't have a character after a while. It's just the mom mm-hmm. who is not the mom I thought she was. She's played by Frances O'Connor, who's a British Australian actress who's in like Mansfield Park, Importance of Being mm-hmm. Earnest and stuff. I always remembered her as being the wife from The Sixth Sense. And then mm-hmm. I was like, oh, wait, it wasn't her. It's this other woman who I don't know.
Yep.
So, yes.
And this is important later because during that shot, he does manage to slice off a bit of her hair and we do see Teddy grab it.
Right.
And later on, we see Teddy sewing himself up and we just assume he's either like gotten hurt or something or whatever.
And Teddy also imprints on David because yes. Teddy has been given to David by this other son who doesn't mm-hmm. want him anymore. He's a broken old super toy, a super toy that can repair itself. Mm-hmm. So
and also isn't broken.
Right. It's just he's just old. He's an old model. Mm-hmm. Long story short, David gets recalled. Why does David have to go?
He after the incident at the pool, the dad is like, we can't keep him because he's endangering our families. And the mom is like, okay. And she goes to talk to David and is like really clearly upset and goes for a ride because she's heavily invested emotionally in this robot at this point.
And so you're given a robot child with mm-hmm. the caveat that if you send it back, it will be fed foot first into a shredder with like obscenities hurled at it. And it'll be told over and over again that its parents never loved it. I guess because they keep saying like, if you send it back to us, we're going to have to destroy it. There's no like reprogramming it. We're going to punch it in the face till it dies. Yeah. And we're going to wear a mask of you while we do it. Yeah. So like she can't take it back.
She's driving on the way there. She can't do it. She pulls over to the side of the road, gets out of the car and like leaves him in the woods. And it's like, you got to stay here.
Classic Harry and the Hendersons ending. She's like, go, David. I don't want you anymore. You have to run, please, stupid boy. And like pushes him down and like runs into the car. The David probably knows where she lives also. I don't understand. Okay. I don't get me wrong. I like this movie, but I'm also like, are these robots just stupid?
Are they not, but
they're not even as smart as like a cell phone. Like they're not like, yeah.
I think the point is that the robots aren't, I think that's part of the conversation is the robots aren't given the tools that they need to actually like function. They're only programmed to be exactly what the humans want them to be, because if they were given other tools, they would eventually like overtake, like they wouldn't need humans anymore.
Yeah. So this is like, what if the Brave Little Toaster, mm-hmm. but the Brave Little Toaster was only as intelligent as a toaster.
Yeah.
As opposed to being able to reason anything out, because mm-hmm. yes, the robots in this movie are helpless. And she says to him right before she leaves, she's like, I'm leaving you in the woods, David. Oh, by the way, watch out for the flesh fairs. And then she like runs off.
And then we hard cut to a completely different location.
Yes.
The best location.
Where's the best location?
The second best character in this movie. It's just some city somewhere.
Yes.
It's Robot Vegas, essentially.
Even though this movie is like the whole world is dying. Only a few members of humanity are left and they can barely have, or there's not enough resources for everyone to have kids. Something mm-hmm. we only ever really see a boardroom, their house, mm-hmm. and then sex world.
Yep.
What if Disney World, but for sex?
But for sex, the answer is robots, and also Einstein as an AI fortune teller,
voiced by Robin Williams, his own self, but uncredited, I think. Mm-hmm. It was a huge deal when Robin Williams was in this movie. People were like, holy crap, he got Robin Williams back. We saw Hook and we're like, can he get Robin Williams for another movie? He does, as Mr. DNA, kind of, from the Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
He's sort of doing this Einstein voice. He looks like Einstein.
I love him.
It's like Clippy the Paperclip. But he's also... He's Mr. No, K-N-O-W, but he's also, you only get a few, you could ask questions of Mr. No, who's basically the internet.
Yeah.
But it's like, what if you went on Google?
You had to click categories.
You had to tell Google what category you're searching in. And if you get it wrong, you only get a few more questions. Mm-hmm. And then you have to pay Google another $15.
It's awesome. I love it.
Yes. By the way, I've said Google enough now that my phone keeps. So we have Mr. No.
Yeah.
We just.
He's about as useful as Mr. No.
At the time, this was like groundbreaking. Like, mm-hmm. what if you could go into a booth, pay $100, and a Google would come up and be like, I'll answer your question, but you got to phrase it correctly, kid.
Yeah. And also, I may just make something up because you combine categories, which is kind of just like current AI.
That is like current AI. So, but we've already skipped Gigolo Joe. So go back to Gigolo Joe.
Gigolo Joe is a robot prostitute.
Mm-hmm. Robostitute.
He's awesome. He's amazing.
Played by Jude Law.
Yep. And he is just a robot prostitute. Like, he's not like a set, like, he hasn't like escaped any, like, he's just a sent, like, he's not sentient. He's just doing what he's programmed to do. And we see him interacting with with a woman, and we kind of get like a rush of his story, which is he's a robot prostitute. He's sleeping in with a woman. He is licensed technically. He's licensed currently, and so he doesn't have to worry about the flesh fair people. But when he goes to meet with his next client, it's a woman, and she's dead, and her husband has discovered her sleeping with this robot instead of with him, and has somehow framed Gigolo Joe for the murder, and so he's on the run now.
And honestly, in the amount of time it took you to relate that, that's how much time is devoted to this.
Yep.
Gigolo Joe walks into the room, he's like, hey, baby, time to get down to business. Oops, mm-hmm. You're all bloody. Oh, it's the husband. He's like, you're done now, Gigolo Joe. And Gigolo Joe's like, see you later. Like, yep. That's it. I don't understand why Gigolo Joe, like, there has to be some kind of protocol for, like, the robots to not be blamed for bloody murders. I don't know.
I think the issue is that the broader society is okay. Like, doesn't want the robots around, so they don't care.
Right, but the sex hotel probably wants the robots around. The sex hotel is probably like, this happens. We have cameras set up to prove that the robot didn't do the murder. Also, wouldn't this guy have busted in and murdered his wife in there? I don't understand. It's not after he walks out that door, you're just supposed to assume Gigolo Joe is now on the run.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, that's it. There has to be a sex robot.
Part of me wonders if it's less about the actual murder and more about the fact that he removed his licensing, which seems like it would be more illegal for a robot to do, to be honest.
Gigolo Joe, though, not a product of Stanley Kubrick, a product of Ian Watson. I think mm-hmm. originally he was supposed to be like a G.I. Joe type mm-hmm. character. And Ian Watson was like, but what if sex robot? And Kubrick was like, that's weird. And Ian Watson's like, sex robot. And then all the producers of the movie, mm-hmm. all the money people were like, well, there goes every bit of merchandising we were hoping to get out of this film. Because this film, honestly, they were like, this is going to be the big family film movie. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a huge merchandise movie. We're going to sell action figures of these characters. We're going to sell play sets. We're going to sell like vehicles, t-shirts, dolls. And as soon as they were like, it's about a boy and a sex robot. And most of the characters for 15 minutes are sex robots. They're mm-hmm. like, oh, I guess we're not selling any toys of this movie anymore. The only thing that ever came out, I think there was a teddy. But otherwise, they were done.
And well, Kubrick, I can't imagine any of these things having action figures.
I like watching Gigolo Joe move. Apparently, he.
I really like his character.
Jude Law studied mime and the way peacocks
move.
Yeah. And he also studied like Fred Astaire for like sort of mm-hmm. dance movements. He's very fluid. Yeah. He moves like a robot. As you said, all he knows is how to be a sex robot.
Yeah.
Like that's it. He's not.
And he knows like where robots go.
Yes.
That's about it.
And where they go is into cages for the flesh fair or whatever it's called.
Yeah, which is, the flesh fair doesn't make any sense.
Why not?
Because they float around in moon-shaped hot air balloons and use giant magnets to scoop robots up that are scavenging for parts.
Yeah, so Brendan Gleeson is essentially, he's like the evil puppet master in Pinocchio, who finds Pinocchio and brings him in and is... In the novel of Pinocchio, the puppet master is a nice enough guy, but he also burns the puppets for fire in his fire for like warmth and doesn't realize they're alive or have like feelings. And then once he realizes that Pinocchio has feelings, he starts feeling bad about it. And that's kind of what happens in this a little bit.
Not really.
But this giant hot air balloon shows up. Gigolo Joe and Haley Joel Osment run into a bunch of other robots, and this moon comes up over the horizon. It's this glowing full moon, but then it's actually the flesh fair.
And then Tron happens.
Right. And then all of a sudden it's Trons, by which you mean people on cyber cycles.
Yeah, with dragon heads and helmets. And they start rounding up all the robots in a really inconvenient manner. There is one robot. It's really like, there's just it's all nonsense.
Right. It's one not very efficient.
Who I think is like a robot nanny.
Yes.
She like latches on to David for like a minute to take care of him because that's just what she's programmed to do. They all get taken to the flesh fair. It's like a monster truck rally.
It is. It is.
All these people are like cheering for the robots to get destroyed and stuff. Meanwhile, I'm just like, this is a nightmare to watch because the robots are all like begging to not be like hurt.
Yes, except for one robot, the Chris Rock robot. So there's a comedian robot who was originally supposed to be played by Jerry Seinfeld. And then Seinfeld couldn't do it. So they got Chris Rock, a robot that kind of looks like Chris Rock. And they're feeding him into like a cannon or a. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's like, this isn't what I signed up for. And like that's, or he says like one line.
Well, because I think it's back to the robots are only programmed to know and do what they're like made to do. All he can do is make jokes about the situation.
Except that like, so a big deal was kind of made about Chris Rock playing a voice in this, and then he has literally one line. He's like, "Don't kill me."
Then we see, Teddy's been dropped at this point, which is a horrifying thing to watch.
Not dropped from the movie, like literally
dropped out of the hot air balloon. He held on to David when David got scooped and fell because he's a teddy bear.
He is a teddy bear.
Thought he was gonna die, but he didn't die. Instead, he waddled his way to the flesh fair to go look for David, and everyone was like, "What's this teddy bear doing here?" And he's like, "I'm looking for David." And they were like, "You're an acceptable robot, so we'll get you to the lost and found."
So there's also like there's Brendan Gleeson, who's like the ringmaster, but there's also the guy who runs the flesh fair.
Yeah, who runs all like, of the like lights and stuff.
He's like the AV side, and his kid is there, and she's like, "There's a boy in one of the cages," and they're like, "A boy," and then they're like, "Oh my gosh, it's actually a boy android. No, these don't even exist." But then Brendan Gleeson is like, "We gotta kill him.
We gotta do like it." Like, clearly, here's the thing: the people are pissed off because the robots are like taking like their like spot, like their jobs, and like all of that, and yada yada. Makes sense. So he thinks that they're going to also be pissed off because, oh, now they're trying to make robots to replace our children.
Yes.
And instead, what I said was going to happen happened, which is everyone is like, "Oh, that looks like a real human boy. All of my like parental instincts are kicking in, and we don't want to watch the boy get acid dropped on him or hot oil."
Come to find out, doesn't matter. People don't want to see a child get murdered in front of them. That's not fun.
Especially when the child starts screaming for them to stop.
Right. It was bad enough when they watched the nanny robot get melted. Like, that was upsetting enough. But this is just a boy who only knows how to love.
And he calls out like, "Oh, he who is without sin, throw the first stone." And someone throws something at him, and then everyone's throwing everything. And the tech guy frees the robots, and they all run.
So backing up just a little bit, David has been read The Adventures of Pinocchio by his mother, who he's programmed to love. And he thinks he can become a real little boy if he finds the blue fairy like in Pinocchio.
Yep.
So just know that this has been his like goal. He's like, I got to find the blue fairy. He runs into Gigolo Joe and he's like, I got to find the blue fairy. Gigolo Joe is like, I'm a gigolo. I'm a robot prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
My programming only allows me to have sex with ladies. And I guess help this one little boy.
Because it's, I think it's the Pinocchio, not Pinocchio. David says, I'm looking for a woman.
Right. And Gigolo Joe's like, I know how to find women. But it's also, so this is sort of a Pinocchio story, sort of a Wizard of Oz story.
Mm-hmm.
Because David's like, come with me, you know, like help me find the blue fairy. So it's got this kind of like, we're off to see the wizard sense to it as well. Because Pinocchio's not after the blue fairy.
Mm-hmm.
Pinocchio's just the blue fairy keeps interrupting him.
Yeah. And Pinocchio's this is, like, I just want to cause issues and you're interrupting me causing issues.
Right. So this is where they go to a resort town. They go to Gigolo, not Gigolo Joe, they go to Dr. No.
Yep.
And he tells them where to go.
Kind of. It's at first it's a thing where they can't figure out what's going on, because the Pinocchio story isn't real, but if the blue fairy is real, then it has to be real. So they have to combine categories. And then something weird happens. And I was like, there's no way. Because it was, I think it was pretty easy to clock that somebody interfered with Dr. No. Because it suddenly changed, like, vibes.
Yeah.
And he gives them this, like, riddle of, like, where to go and stuff, to where the lions cry.
Yeah.
And Gigolo Joe's like, oh, a lot of robots have gone there. So you should go there. And
it's New York. It's New York City.
It's New York City. But David's like, hey, kid, this is really dangerous. Maybe don't do that. Like, you can stay here with me instead and everything will be fine. And David's like, no, I have to go find this blue fairy. So they're planning on splitting up. And then the cops show up.
And then the cops show up because David is still on the run.
Or Gigolo Joe is still on the run. And so is David.
Yes, because they want Gigolo Joe. They want to, I guess, take him apart.
Mm-hmm. And you would think that, like, whatever.
So they escape again.
Well, David steals one of their copters.
Yeah, helicopters.
And then Gigolo Joe is like, okay, I guess we're doing this, and takes over flying because David's a child and cannot fly a helicopter, even though I don't know how Gigolo Joe can fly a helicopter.
Fly a helicopter either. They're all just robots.
And then they fly to New York.
They get there. Everything's underwater.
Mm-hmm.
The crying lions are these two, like, lion gargoyles that, like, spit water out of their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, like, at the top. I think they're at the top of Rockefeller Center.
Yeah.
Is what it's supposed to be. And David gets there and he finds himself waiting for him.
And yeah, he finds himself waiting for him, has a complete meltdown because this entire time he's been like, no, I'm special. I'm unique. I'm the only David. Before this, though, we got a flashback to the creator of the robot after he learned that David had escaped.
Yes.
And we see that he's built David after his own son.
Yeah, David finds photographs of this guy with his son who looks like David. He finds another David who's apparently been left there just to be destroyed by David.
Yeah, who promptly destroys him. And then Gigolo Joe's like, see ya.
And he also has a Toy Story 2 moment where he walks into a factory and sees boxes of himself ready for shipping. Also female Davids called Darlene's.
Yeah.
And like all boxed up and ready to go. The only child you'll ever need has a major existential breakdown, tries to kill himself by throwing himself off the building, but it's rescued by Gigolo Joseph.
Yep. And then the cops show back up because he also has this whole interaction with the creator and the creator's like, wait here. I'm going to go bring everyone. And then never shows back up.
It's really weird. He's like, you knocked the head off the other boy. Don't worry. You're a marvel of engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, Obed. I'm going to go get some people. And he leaves. And then David's like, I'm out. He throws himself off the building, gets rescued by Gigolo Joe. But then Gigolo Joe gets taken away by the cops.
Well, he falls into the ocean and sees something under there.
Right.
And Gigolo Joe saves him. And he's like, no, I saw the blue fairy down there. I know she's down there. Gigolo Joe's like, okay. And then he gets taken by the cops and he's like, remember me. And
then he leaves. I'm out. He does this basically.
Yep.
And then he disappears.
And he disappears. And so David and Teddy, who's still there, go into the water to find the blue fairy. And they find, I don't know what theme park this is.
So it's supposed to be Coney Island.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be the sort of fairy tale theme park. The Wonder Wheel falls onto the submersible and traps David and Teddy down there. But there's a statue in like Pinocchio land or fairy tale land, storybook land, of the blue fairy that David sees. And he's like, make me real, make me real. And he just keeps wishing on this blue fairy statue to be made real until his battery runs down.
Well, until the water freezes over.
And then the water freezes. And then we cut to 2,000 years later.
Yep. Oh, and before we did that, we discovered that the riddle that led them to that place for the Blue Fairy was implanted into Dr. No by the CEO to get David to the place.
Right.
Cuts to 2,000 years later, and aliens. They're not aliens, they're
They're not
just really
aliens.
advanced robots, but they look like aliens.
Okay, so this is the part where people got super confused
Understandable.
because everyone thought these were aliens because they look
Like
like
aliens.
aliens. They are tall and slender, smooth skin with no features,
And they
long,
have
delicate fingers,
spaceships.
and they fly around in spaceships. They're excavating the frozen land of New York. They're taking out like levitating cubes. They're basically archaeologists trying to find out about humanity. And but yes, what they are, and you can get this from context clues, is they are the AI. They are the mechs. Advanced though, they have
2,000 years
continued.
advanced, because they've had to start, they lost a lot of humanity because they had to start making themselves, essentially.
They start rebuilding themselves. They've streamlined the process. They're not necessary. They don't have to look like humans anymore.
And they're sentient, and they can feel.
Except they don't have any connection to humanity
No.
because they don't know anyone who knew humans. And all of a sudden they find David and realize, whoa, 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 this guy was in contact with humanity. We can sort of figure some stuff out from his brain. So they dig him up, they bring him into their own psychedelic universe, and they tell him essentially like,
They use a vision of the blue fairy because David wakes up. I don't think his battery ran down because he just kind of wakes up completely fine
oh, I think
after they.
I assume that they like recharged it.
Oh, maybe. But he wakes
I
up
assume.
completely fine after, like, immediately after getting out of the ship.
Right. The secret though is that they just have to touch him and he can do things, and you're like, oh, they're robots, like they're just super advanced.
And the blue fairy statue falls apart in front of him because it's been frozen and then unfrozen, and
Right.
it's
It's just
2,000
made out
years
of it's
old.
made out of plaster. I don't know how it was still in that good of a shape to begin with. But they're like, look, we've got this technology. We can bring a person back from the dead
For
for
one day.
one day,
It's
only if we have.
honestly the most honest anybody is with David in the movie,
Yeah,
and it's
they're
very
like,
refreshing.
you can spend time a day with one person, but they're gonna die after one day. And unfortunately, we need some of their genetic material to bring them back, and we don't have any.
And then
And
Teddy, the best boy, because he's he they sent so backtracking. He wakes up in his house and it's empty. And then he goes over to a window and they send a vision of the blue fairy to him. And he's like, ask for anything you want. And he's like, I want my mom back. And then cuts to one of the robots being like, hey, so we can't do that. We just want you to be happy though, yada yada yada. But we would need a piece of your mom's like genetic material. And David gets all despondent. And then Teddy reaches into the like sewed up bit of him and pulls out the hair that David cut off, and they're able to bring his mom back for one day, and it's very sweet and very sad.
And they have this very touching scene where she says she loves him. Then she falls asleep, and then David and Teddy lay down next to her and die. And I guess that's the so there's a movie called The Bicentennial Man, which is based on the novel The Positronic Man, by Isaac Asimov, and I can't remember who else. That's about an AI, a robot who is designed to think like a person and be a personal servant for a family who wants to become human. And the crux of the story is that this robot survives for centuries serving this one family and trying to become human by replacing his body parts with physical body parts, actual body parts, learning to be human. And the final part of the story is they're like, he's like, am I human at the end? And they're like, no, you're not, because you can't die. Mm-hmm. The only way you can die is to have your entire nervous system and like brain replaced by an organic brain. And so he does, and he dies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, he finally is human. And to me, that story works very well. Because it's like the what makes us human is the fact that we don't last all summer long. We don't live forever. Like, we have to die at some point to give our lives an ending and a beginning and a middle and an end, to give our lives this meaning. And Pinocchio as a story is like, no, to be human, you have to be made of meat.
Yeah.
And then Guillermo del Toro is like, no, to be human, you simply have to have a connection to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, no, Guillermo del Toro does say at the end of that, you have to have the ability to die. Mm-hmm. Like, that's his Pinocchio story, is Pinocchio has to be able to die in order to be human.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this movie says, too, is David doesn't become human by the fact that he's able to love. He's human by the fact that his life has meaning, and then he passes away into meaning. At the end, like, he's given meaning to the lives of these new robots, these new super toys.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of what I took away from it this time.
I took away from the movie that humans suck.
But you always think that.
Yeah. No, but this one really just was like, wow. I don't know. It's just the entire idea of creating something to love you so much that it gives itself a purpose, and then abandoning what you created and either destroying it or leaving it completely helpless in a world that hates it is like, it's the Frankenstein story. Except for this wasn't a stupid college student pushing the boundaries of science. This was two adult people, well, three adult people, a scientist who had lost his son, a set of parents who still had their son but were potentially losing their son, creating a robot to fill a void, and then once there was no purpose to it, abandoning it. And you can't make something to love you and then just get rid of it and not expect that to bite you in the butt.
Right. A la Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
I see this as a movie about the fact that humanity is done.
Mm-hmm.
They killed themselves.
Yeah.
And there's a few people hanging on.
Mm-hmm.
They've created something that will outlive them, will outlast them. And they're desperately trying to keep that from being the fact that these robots won't die. They can self-perpetuate and they can learn.
Yeah.
And the final straw is teaching them to have affection. It's teaching them to love one another. And David's kind of the Christ figure in that sense. Like, he has to die and be resurrected in 2,000 years for these. It's Spielberg with his Christ allegories again.
We got the Pinocchio story, the Frankenstein story, and the Jesus story all in one.
But David has to die and come back in 2,000 years to teach the people of the new millennium, like, about their own humanity. And it's interesting because they have to learn humanity from someone who is so far removed from humanity.
Yeah.
But it's still important. Like, that connection is still important. I think it's Ben Kingsley is the voice of the robot that resurrects him. So yeah, this movie had a lot of work done by like a lot of incredibly talented people. Haley Joel Osment was the first choice for David. Like, they were basically like, we can't do the movie if we don't get Haley Joel Osment. Like, they interviewed a bunch of kids, but Spielberg was like, this. Remember, Spielberg wanted Haley Joel Osment to play Harry Potter. When he was attached to direct, and it was only J.K. Rowling who was like, no, these have to be British kids.
Yeah.
And Spielberg was like, then I'm out. I don't work with the British. And he left. But yeah, Industrial Light and Magic did the visual effects. They used virtual sets in a way that hadn't been done before. Even though we had seen, like, Lucas was kind of dabbling in this world with the Star Wars prequels, this just blew that away. Like,
yeah, it did.
Spielberg just knew how to use it so much better.
Prequels had their own issues.
They also had script and story issues and stuff, but there's a lot of practical robots, a lot of puppetry involved in this that were then enhanced by AI, or not AI, CGI.
Yep.
And Stan Winston did a lot of the puppeteering and a lot of the special effects work. It was really complicated working with Teddy. They had to build sets like high up so that people underneath could work the puppets. But yeah, it all came
Teddy
together.
Teddy moves like a puppet.
He does, and yeah, and I think that's important.
Yeah, it looks like he shouldn't be walking on his own, but yeah, in a way that toys that move look like they shouldn't be walking on their own.
And then a lot of the robots who were missing limbs were played by actors who were missing those limbs.
Oh, nice.
They just were like, yeah, we need a casting call for actors who are missing legs and arms so that you can play robots who are missing these legs and arms. It said we did several tests on Gigolo Joe, some with full face prosthetic devices, but it looked too surrealistic. Mm-hmm. And they really wanted Gigolo Joe to be friendly and warm. Mm-hmm. So he does have prosthetic jaw piece and facial makeup, but they wanted to really give Jude Law the ability to have full facial expressions. Because I guess a lot of the pre-production work was done on like, how fake do we want these robots to look?
Yeah. And the answer ended up being not very,
not
except for when
fake
they're supposed to be.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Apparently there's a lot of Kubrick Easter eggs in this movie. Mm-hmm. If you look in the backgrounds in Rouge City.
There's a lot to see in those backgrounds.
Yeah. I guess the Cordova Milk Bar from Clockwork Orange is like there, like in the city. So yeah, they did a lot of work on this, a lot of work on stuff that would go, a lot of like technological advances that would go on to be used in Spielberg's, I think, next movie, which was his Philip K. Dick movie with Tom Cruise. What was it called? I can't think of any names anymore. I can't think of what anything is called. You may as well just put me out to pasture, my friends, because I can't think of any. I'm because Willow's not talking.
War of Worlds?
Nope. That's
Minority Report.
Minority Report. Oh yeah. So he does AI. This movie does okay, but it's Minority Report that really puts him over the top. So So Spielberg at this point, I'm looking at his filmography. He had done Jurassic Park and Schindler's List, and then The Lost World and Amistad. He had Saving Private Ryan, and then right after Saving Private Ryan, he jumps into this. This one's not as big a hit as people were hoping. Saving Private Ryan like changed the world.
You gotta have a few movies in between the hits. Also, this movie was kind of a mess. I understand why it wasn't as big of a hit.
People didn't know what to make of it. The last Kubrick they'd had experience with was Eyes Wide Shut, which was a sex film, a sex thriller with a lot of nudity and sex. And so having Kubrick associated with this was weird for some people. Was it a children's film? Was it a family film? Was it an adventure film? Was it like a philosophical scientific film? We weren't really sure. He follows this up the next year with Minority Report, which is a Tom Cruise future action film. All these ideas come together much better. I think because Minority Report is based on Philip K. Dick, it's about the future and paranoia and like what is reality? What is, you know, where is our place in this world of technology? Minority Report, which is then followed up by our next movie. So I guess our next movie is another Spielberg movie.
Is it War of Worlds?
It is not War of the Worlds. It is not.
No, the Google AI just put those three as the next Spielberg films that came out.
No, we'll get to that in a second. But we started watching this movie and you were immediately like, this is Pinocchio.
Yep.
You were like, this is Pinocchio. And then we were like, oh, I wonder why Guillermo del Toro likes this movie so much. Guillermo del Toro loves Spielberg. He doesn't have a whole lot of Spielberg movies on this list, but he loves Spielberg and he loves this movie. This movie is his Pinocchio.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes, this movie is so much, you know, a father who loses his son creates this robot. It has a little less fascism than del Toro's Pinocchio, but it does have a lot of the same themes. Fatherhood, parenthood,
your son dies so you make an artificial boy,
right? You make a fake boy. To me it's also a combination of The Boy and Megan. You who had no idea what this movie was about for a long time were like, is he gonna kill everyone? You kept thinking that maybe David was going to become you didn't know if this was a horror movie or not.
No, I had no idea what was happening. He looked like he was going to kill everyone many times.
Because especially before he imprints on his mother, he's just this sort of blank face smile boy.
He is an autistic child.
Yes, he's very much like, oh, okay. And he's just kind of like doing stuff. He's unpredictable. He's off-putting. And but then she imprints, or she makes him imprint on her.
Even
and his
after
face,
the imprinting.
But even then, his face suddenly relaxes a lot. Mm-hmm. And he becomes a lot more human. And not to say that autistic people don't seem human, but he's coded as neurodivergent.
Incredibly so.
Like, a lot. Which, in fact, to an extent, that like watching this is kind of like, you're just watching a family who've adopted a neurodiverse child.
Yeah.
And don't know how to treat him.
Yep.
Because
and then they leave him in the woods.
And then they abandon him in the woods. They they literally
abandon
their boy. So, but you can watch this and be like, oh, I can't see why Guillermo del Toro loves this. He loves children. He loves when horrible things happen to children because of stupid adults.
And he loves Pinocchio.
And he loves Frankenstein. He wants our mysterious monsters to feel okay. And he loves lush world building, like visual world building. He loves a descent. We love it when he wants things to descend into the underworld, and they do in this at the end. There's even a reference to the whale from Pinocchio. He sees like the whale under the water.
And he loves tall, spindly humanoid creatures.
Right. There is no Doug Jones in this movie, but there could have been if Doug Jones had played the CGI, the not CGI, the AI alien things at the end. They're not aliens. They're just robots. But yes, our next movie in the Ecstasy of Influence, we are jumping in on with an unusual Spielberg movie that I am curious as to why Guillermo del Toro chose this one. Do you know what the movie is? Any idea? Catch me.
Oh, wait, is it right?
If you can. We're jumping over Minority Report and getting into the biopic based on a true story called Catch Me If You Can, a series of lies about a series of lies about a man who is not what he says he is, but that's kind of the point of the plot. It's a weird choice, and I'm curious to watch it and say, like, what is Guillermo del Toro like about this movie?
Catch Me If You Can sounds like the name. There's a movie that came out a few years ago about a group of guys who play tag as adults, like all over the place. It sounds like it should be, that's what that movie should be titled.
It's not at all. It's not about that at all. Instead, it's about Leonardo DiCaprio and Tommy Hanks. And all of their wacky adventures, not really wacky adventures, sort of based on a autobiography that is sort of based on the writer's own life.
All right. Sort of based, kind of.
So we're not covering The Terminal, thank God. We're not covering War Horse, but we are covering Catch Me If You Can. Man, Spielberg's just made a lot of movies. He's just made a lot.
We're not covering Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Nope. We're not covering The Adventures of Tantan.
We're not covering The Big Friendly Giant. I forgot that movie came out.
Lincoln or Bridge of Spies. We're not covering
Also not
the
covering
Post
Ready Player One.
Or West Side Story or The Fablemans. We are covering Catch Me If You Can on our next episode of It's Del Toro Time. Willow, yeah. Final thoughts? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Watch this movie immediately. It made me cry.
It did make you cry. Multiple times.
Yes.
You teared all up.
I loved this movie, even if it was a mess of three different people's very different ideas of what the movie should
it's
be.
It's a mess of a film, but it's definitely worth watching. 2.5 hours doesn't feel like it.
Does not. I was
Just
worried because
by.
It was 2.5 hours. It did not feel like 2.5 hours.
Just flies on by. If you like robot boys, if you like women getting melted in front of you, if you like Gigolo Joes and animated Robins Williamses, you'll
Seek
love
help.
AI, artificial intelligence. I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when it's
Del Toro
time.
Why did you slow
because
down
there's
so
a
much.
Little bit of a delay. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.